This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Teaching profession in crisis. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. Teachers are under an unusual amount of stress, and many are leaving the job early. Some predict a growing staffing problem. Also, between the ages of 25 and 40, many Americans are buying homes, but new numbers suggest many don't see themselves reaching that milestone. Plus, as we enter the post-pandemic, men returning to the office in person want to know, is it okay to wear shorts? And what happened to our promise of becoming better restaurant tippers?
I think there's a lot of room for improvement elsewhere, because we found that only two-thirds of people always tip their hairstylist or barber. Only 57% always tip for food delivery, and then it goes below 50%. Taxi and rideshare drivers only get a tip from 43% of people who tip every time.
Ted Rossman at creditcards.com has new data that show we're not keeping our pledge. Well, teaching has become one of the most draining jobs in America. Teachers are asking themselves whether shouldering today's burdens is still worth it, given their stagnant wages, and many experts warn of a looming staffing crisis. In-depth analysis from Erica Pandy, business reporter at Axios. Erica, what have you found?
Teachers are now dealing with a country where mass shootings in schools happen. You know, it happens over and over again. They're dealing with a pandemic. They're dealing with having to switch to virtual learning when a lot of them had no idea how to do that. They're dealing with mental health of kids. We're in a mental health epidemic for America's kids, and a lot of them are going to their teachers for help. And on top of all of that, they have not seen their wages go up. They're, you know, risking their lives, some of our older teachers, to go to work in the middle of COVID. And it's just become this stressful environment that's become untenable for a lot of educators.
I was struck by an example you gave of a school district in Vermont, which said basically they have job openings and get zero applications at times.
Absolutely. We just have stopped minting as many teachers in this country. I mean, this is not a COVID problem. This has been happening for the last decade or so. We used to make around 200,000 teachers a year, and now we make around 90,000 teachers a year. The best applicants are going to other professions. So superintendents are telling me they're worried about the quality of teachers they're getting, and sometimes they're not even getting any teachers. Some districts are trying to upskill janitors and bus drivers who, you know, they at least love kids. They may not have the skills to get in the classroom, but maybe we can teach them. There's so many creative things happening, but, you know, the biggest problem is just money.
Yeah. And you referenced, too, the politics some teachers face inside classrooms while they're trying to do their jobs.
Absolutely. I mean, schools have become such a political battleground. They always have been, but even more so now with, you know, parents and politicians getting involved and teach this, don't teach this. And, you know, teachers are one of the jobs in this country where everybody feels like they can have an opinion. You know, everybody says you're doing your job wrong. And so many teachers tell us that they just never even hear a simple thank you. It's always you did this wrong, you did that wrong. Politics seeping in a place where it should be, you know, about open minds and learning. And they're just dealing with so much.
We're speaking with Erica Pandy, business reporter at Axios. Her story is called America is Pushing Teachers to the Brink. A lot, too, I guess, are leaving earlier than planned, putting additional strain on the broader system.
Right. I mean, 55% of teachers in a recent National Education Association survey said that they were considering leaving the profession even before their, you know, retirement benefits kicked in. So people are getting really desperate. And obviously, you know, like every problem, the shortage is hitting the already under-resourced schools the hardest. So, you know, the colleges in rural communities are graduating fewer teachers than colleges in richer communities. Schools with disproportionately students of color are seeing more staffing shortages. So we haven't quite hit crisis level yet, is what we're hearing from, you know, the different districts, but they're very worried. The signs they're seeing are all pointing to just an extreme shortage of teachers. And then parents are noticing this too. You know, you're seeing more and more parents switching to homeschooling. You're seeing more and more switching to private school, those that can. And it's just a, you know, if you zoom out even more, it's a very concerning outlook for the public education system, which is supposed to be one of the crown jewels of this country.
Yeah. You referenced, too, that I guess some people in leadership positions are trying to find small ways to ease the burdens of teachers. What would that include?
Right. So there's something all of us can do, right? You know, we all live in communities that have schools. A lot of superintendents are trying to recruit people in the community to send thank you notes to, you know, come in and volunteer if you've got some time, be a sub teacher. A Vermont superintendent told me she's bringing in coffee and breakfast for her teachers, trying to give them extra paid time off where she can. And she said it herself. She said, you know, these are little things that are not going to fix the situation, but they may make it more tolerable.
Yeah. What about the effort to, I guess, get more teachers into the system? I don't know. Is that even a thing right now?
Right. I mean, that is one of those big macro kind of government problems that we need to tackle. I mean, I don't know whether it's, you know, incentives for teachers. I don't know whether it's messaging from the government, whether it's forgiving loans in a swifter way. But there's something wrong in the economics and the calculus here, where this job, which is hugely important, which is training, you know, the next generation of our country, is no longer appealing to the best and the brightest. And so how do we fix that?
Thanks, Erica. Erica Pandy, business reporter at Axios. Coming up next, how to avoid being scatterbrained.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. There are some days when you feel like a cat chasing a laser pointer, right? Emails over here, meetings over there. Have to run across the hall and go do this. How can we keep scattered energy from holding us back? The secret to a more productive day, from George Nagel, innovation consultants and author of a book called The Five-Letter F Word, which stands for focus. George, why do we allow this?
Well, we allow it because that's what we know. That's what we've always seen everybody else do. There are writings from ancient Sumeria and Egypt where people complain about this same. We can't seem to get anything done. We're not able to deliver anything. We're always missing deadlines. It just seems to be part of our nature.
How do we begin to address it? Do we all know that we're scatterbrained, or maybe in some cases we don't actually recognize it?
You know, Gordon, you hit the nail right on the head. It's most people aren't even aware of how unfocused they are. So we have to really just take a moment, recognize what we're doing, and then ask ourselves, is that really what I want to be doing, and what does that actually help me achieve? And when people start to slow down like that, that's where they start to bring that awareness. And without awareness, we can't have change.
We're speaking with George Nagel, innovation consultant, also author of a book called The Five-Letter F-Word. And we're talking about how to stop being scatterbrained. Is it possible that this is just a work problem, or if we have the problem at work, we probably have it at home as well?
It tends to be a life problem, regardless of work type atmospheres. Though, when we start talking about it at home, it manifests itself usually when we talk about work, and that's our excuse for why that happens at home. But it's really not. It's a across-the-board type of thing, and I would say, Gordon, that for most people that want to start to bring change so that they can actually focus at work, they need to start at home.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so start how, George?
So there's a couple of different ways besides just being aware of it. So one of my favorite tools that I offer people is this. I want you to sit down, write out three goals that you can easily accomplish within 3 months. Write them out by hand, and tape them to like your bathroom mirror or to the inside of your bedroom door. And every time you see it, say it out loud. If you fail to do that, you have to write it out three more times and post it in three more prominent places. And every time you pass it, you have to say it out loud.
Right.
It's an annoying thing to do. But the annoying part of it is what actually, if you have the discipline, actually gets you to accomplish those things. And then you start to focus and you start to, it's called rewiring your neuroplasticity. And that activity in and of itself is the fastest way to do that and get focus, and then you start to carry that over to work.
All right, so then what?
Well, when we carry it over to work, what you're going to see, you'll see this at home too, though it's a little bit more manageable, is people are going to notice that you're changing, and they're not necessarily intentionally going to want to pull you back to how they've always seen you operate because that's more comfortable for them, but that's what's going to happen, and you just need to hold on to the grit or that idea of, no, I want to do things and accomplish things. I'm starting to do that, and I'm feeling happier. And that is the key to it. You will actually feel happier as you accomplish, and you just need that grit to stick with it. And by the way, out of the things that people list as a contributor to success, grit is the first one.
Is it possible then, just based on what you've said, to actually be a good multitasker, or are there just people who don't do as much as others and think they're good multitaskers?
Yeah, that's funny. So for a long time, I believed I was a good multitasker until I started to actually get into the science of it. Our brains don't operate that way. What you're doing is a bunch of small little things in quick succession, and you're able to jump back and forth. People that say they're good multitaskers typically are not good achievers of anything significant.
Whoa.
They can get a lot of little things done,
okay,
but they can't get the big things done that matter.
Thanks, George. Innovation consultant George Nagel, author of The Five-Letter F Word. Coming up next, what happened to being a better tipper?
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could be with us. Although many Americans vowed to become better tippers because of the financial impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on service industry employees, new data from creditcards.com shows they have failed to follow through. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
For a while during the pandemic, we felt bad for people working in service industries. Apparently, that's no longer the case. As Ted Rossman of creditcards.com tells us, we are worse tippers today than before COVID hit. Ted, what has happened first to restaurant tipping?
It's gone down, at least in terms of the percentage of people who always tip, from 77% in 2019 to 75% in 2021. Now it's down to 73%. There's certain groups that really stand out, though. Only 52% of Gen Zers always tip at a restaurant. That's really low. Only 60% of millennials always tip. That goes up to 87% of boomers. Now, the average is 21%. So when people tip, they tip pretty well. But I think the real point here is a lot of people are leaving nothing, and that's disappointing.
What about rideshare drivers and some of the other categories that you looked at?
Yeah, things really go downhill from here because I mentioned there's room for improvement at restaurants. I think there's a lot of room for improvement elsewhere because we found that only 2/3 of people always tip their hairstylist or barber. Only 57% always tip for food delivery, and then it goes below 50%. Taxi and rideshare drivers only get a tip from 43% of people who tip every time. For housekeepers at the hotel or coffee shop baristas, it's only about 1 in 4 who always tip. So a lot of people could stand to do a lot better, I think.
Do we have any idea why the tipping is less now today than before COVID?
A couple of theories. One would be inflation just squeezing people's purchasing power. Although, you know, not to be harsh, but there is a school of thought, like if you can't afford to tip appropriately, maybe you shouldn't go to that restaurant or you should go to a cheaper one. But I wonder if that's part of it. I think the other thing is that we keep hearing about these staffing shortages, and some of these businesses may not be giving the best service these days. They're just kind of run ragged by the staffing shortage. I know we hear about that at restaurants. That one is tough, too, though, because restaurant wait staff really depend on these tips to make a living. So I think that it's harsh to take the tip away because, you know, you waited too long for a table or your food wasn't quite right. I mean, I think unless it's something really, really bad, I would try not to hit the server in the wallet. It may not even be their fault. You know, it may be something more with the maitre d' or the kitchen, or but these are some of the things we hear.
We're speaking with Ted Rossman of creditcards.com. Ted, could the numbers be somewhat skewed because in the beginning of the pandemic, we felt so awful for the people who had to be out around other people while some of us got to stay home?
I think that's part of it. I think there's also a disconnect sometimes between what people say and what they do. We know inflation has squeezed people. I think some of the demographics are really interesting on this because generally speaking, the older you are and the more money you make, the better of a tipper you are. And I guess that makes sense. But what's surprising is that for a group like Gen Zers or millennials or men for that matter, all three of those groups, they tend to tip less often. But when they tip more generously, which I thought was notable.
Your story notes that there are sometimes places that suggest a certain tip be left. Does that make people angry or do we heed those advice?
The data actually shows that it's positive. 26% tip more when they're encountering a suggested tip amount. 12% tip less. Most people are more or less unchanged. This surprised me as well. I thought there would be more anger here because I hear a lot of complaints anecdotally about this so-called tip creep. Like you're at a coffee shop or food truck and it's really more of just a counter service kind of thing. You're not necessarily thinking that you're going to tip. And then they flip that tablet around and you see the pre-entered amounts and the cashier's looking at you and you feel kind of awkward. I hear that a lot of people are upset by that, but the data shows that it actually leads to higher tips. So I suppose that's a big part of why they do it. It's strategic, too, the amounts they pick. And Uber is like this as well. Do you do 10, 15, 20? Do you do 15, 20, 25? It's kind of human nature to pick that middle amount.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. High interest debt can put you into a financial hole, and a lot of people are too embarrassed to ask for help. That's where Upstart comes in. Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date, whether it's for paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. You can even receive funds in as fast as one business day, from $1,000 to $50,000. And checking your rate at Upstart has to be the easiest process ever invented. The questions are simple, the drop-down boxes are user-friendly, and the application took less than 5 minutes. In addition, all your responses are encrypted and do not affect your credit score, so you have complete security and privacy. Don't wait. Check your rate today at upstart.com/Gordon. That's upstart.com/Gordon to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Again, upstart.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, killing the dream of owning a home. Also, can you finally wear shorts to the office? And orphaned turtles and the kindergartners who set them free. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Well, as you know, there's a war in Eastern Europe. Inflation is soaring, and the stock market and other asset classes recently took a nosedive. Also, savings are dwindling, and it costs more than ever to buy food and gas, which hurts the ability of the sports industrial complex to withdraw dollars from our pockets. So why isn't this depressing the value of sports teams? The Denver Broncos are selling for better than $4.5 billion.
In-depth analysis from Dan Kaplan, reporter at The Athletic. Dan, what's up here?
Well, as the Broncos underscore, the prices of sports teams are just skyrocketing, unlike the stock market, the crypto market, other asset classes. And it's because sports teams over the years, over the decades, have held their value through recessions, through wars, through downturns, upturns. They've held their value in more so. And so a lot of these billionaires, many of whom were came out of the pandemic wealthier than ever, are looking to place their money in stable assets. And the stock market is not a stable asset right now, or other markets. But the sports franchise market is one. And so that's one of the reasons we're seeing these valuations skyrocket.
Boy, part of the explanation, too, as you point out, is media rights. Explain that.
Well, sure. I mean, undergirding the economics of most professional sports are the media rights. The NFL last year, or maybe even 2 years ago, negotiated 10-year, 11-year media deals worth over $100 billion. The NBA is on the precipice of a new media deal negotiations, and they're expected to ask for somewhere north of $80, $85 billion. So, I mean, even Formula One is looking to get $100 million for its U.S. rights,
wow,
which is a significant jump over what it gets today. Live sports content continues to be a must-have in the age of cord-cutting and not watching traditional entertainment programming live. Sports and news, or at least breaking news, that's a must-have for any entertainment conglomerate.
Yeah, I hadn't considered that you can't fast-forward through live sports, which means the value of the advertising dollar goes up, I guess.
Right. I mean, every year the NFL is out of the top 100 rated TV programs. There are something like 60 or 70 of the top 100 rated programs. In an Olympics year, there'll be a few Olympics nights. And very rarely will there be anything other than a sports program or a news program in those top 100. Traditional sitcom, things like that, the reality TV, those just don't register like they once did.
We're speaking with Dan Kaplan, business writer at The Athletic. His piece is called Inflation, Plunge in Stock Market, and Global Uncertainty Can't Stop Surging Team Values. How about the tax break that the owners get? Explain that.
Right. This is, it's not the only reason for the surge. This has been around for a while, but it's not unique to sports, but the acquisition of a business, the buyer can amortize the price off of his or her taxes. So if billionaire X, why don't we say Mr. Walton, who's buying the Broncos, he's buying them for $4.5 billion. He can amortize that over 15 years and take those increments off his own taxes. So that's a big tax break that is often overlooked when people wonder why these billionaires are so willing to buy entities that, you know, while are profitable in the case of NFL teams, certainly aren't profitable enough to justify a $4.5 billion price tag.
Jeez. Ego can also drive up prices, right?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, there's an old saying that sports is the only section of the only business in the newspaper with its own section. The point is, you could be a chemical magnate, you could be a financial trader. Very rarely do you rise to the level of a name brand. But if you own a sports team, everybody in town knows you. And for some of the people, that's important.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Kaplan, business reporter at The Athletic. Coming up next, losing faith in home ownership. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect? The taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost. knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Millennials should be reaching their peak home buying years, but many Americans ages 25 to 40 cannot see themselves reaching that milestone. Dan Latou, a reporter at Insider, has a look at fresh data. Dan, what are we learning?
Yeah, so a real estate firm called Open Door surveyed about 1,000 adults between the ages of 25 to 40, and specifically targeted people who had never owned a home. So these are what they called unmortgaged millennials. And among this crowd, they saw there's still a high desire to own a home. They said about 54%, but about 50% of them aren't sure if they'll ever be a homeowner. And that gap of, you know, these are supposed to be peak home buying years for this age cohort. Does that mean we're going to see lower rates because of this pessimism, so to speak, is what drew us in.
Wow, I can't think, too, of what the trickle-down might be if we don't have these folks buying homes. Is there any sort of impact on the broader housing market if people in that age are not buying?
That's something I don't think we super looked into.
Okay. And then I just, like, with what these folks face, it's, you know, you can make the argument. I don't know how anybody affords a home these days, right? Rising prices, the mortgage rates are climbing, the lack of inventory. What are they supposed to do?
Yeah. So, you know, we asked experts, you know, does this mean we're going to see low rates of ownership? How's this going to play out? And there was one piece of positive news, so to speak, is that there was a time when overall consumer pessimism was actually lower. In the 80s, interest rates were nearly double what today's are. And the amount of people who thought it was a good time to buy a house is actually lower than it is today. And there was obviously a swing. Within a year, consumer sentiment went from 15% thought it was a good time to buy to 60%. But the thing that would kind of hold a swing like that from happening again is just how expensive homes are. Right now, they sit at about over $400,000 for the median home price, which is about 500% more than 1982. But meanwhile, over about the same time, median household income has only increased about 25%.
Wow. Those are stunning numbers. We're speaking with Dan Latou, reporter at Insider. He's got a good story called Millennials Who Aren't Already Homeowners Are Losing Faith That They'll Ever Buy. What else do we take away from some of these findings here, Dan?
That it's a really tough time, and that this generation has gone through at least one recession during their years of salary earning. They're saddled with more debt than previous generations as well. There seems to be not a lot of good news, but at the same time, they still want to own. Speaking to an expert who ran the survey, she said that a lot of millennials still saw buying a home as a way to improve their lives. So there seems to be a concerning gap, and yet people are still kind of holding on hope that something could work out.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Latou, reporter at Insider. Coming up next, can you wear shorts to the office?
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Hey, glad you could be with us. In legal bureaus, tech world enclaves, and even world-famous newsrooms, the question is pinging around again as warmer weather arrives, and that's, can you wear shorts to work? Here to explore is Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Jacob, your take.
You know, it's funny. This is one of those topics that we have discussed a lot. Every summer, it kind of rears its head again of, you know, should you be allowed to wear shorts in the office? Will people wear shorts in the office? All that kind of stuff. This year, it has taken a new cast because obviously right now a lot of companies are trying desperately to get employees back into the workplace. And there's been a lot of discussion we've covered extensively throughout the paper, you know, incentives that companies are offering to sweeten the deal, if you will, you know, get employees back to work by offering them lunch or donuts or coffee or what have you every morning. And there's this idea that people don't really want to break from the way that they've been living while working from home. And that trickles down to what we wear. So there is this sense of relaxing of dress codes, and whether that's a formal declaration from a company of, hey, you know, you're allowed to wear shorts now, or whether that's simply the fact that your boss is now going to turn a blind eye to the fact that you might want to dress a little bit more slovenly as long as you are punching the clock. That kind of, we're seeing that a little bit more, and we're definitely hearing that, you know, from people kind of across fields, whether it's law or marketing or economics.
Is it common anywhere in any industry?
You know, it certainly is common in industries that are already more relaxed. You know, I can say when I spoke with people that worked in communications or that worked in marketing or advertising or these industries that are a little bit more creative, that space to say, you know, in particular Silicon Valley comes to mind, that space to say you can wear whatever you want as long as you do your work, that has kind of been a dominant thought for a while. You know, again, particularly in the tech world, there's this idea that if you're good at coding or if you're good at coming up with ideas, no one should be able to tell you what you quote unquote have to wear to the office. There's other fields, of course, that are, you know, remain more formal. Law in particular comes to mind. You know, we used to say politics came to mind, but if you look at John Fetterman, who's the Democratic candidate for the senator of Pennsylvania, you know, the odds are pretty good that he's seen more in shorts than in a suit.
Yeah. We're speaking with Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "Finally We Can Wear Shorts in the Office, Maybe." I think the argument was made in your piece, well, women can show their knees and calves, why not men, right? What's the response to that?
Well, it's important to note that a dress is inherently more formal. A dress or a skirt are inherently more formal for, you know, whatever reason. That's how we classify them in our heads when we see them. Those are more formal than a pair of shorts. That's just kind of a fact. Whereas ultimately a pair of shorts, it's always going to read as being tremendously more informal. And, you know, a few people have already pointed out that I don't really want to look at a guy's legs. And I don't even mean this in a leering or creepy way, but women kind of tend to know or take a little bit better care, if you will, of their legs and how they look. Whereas men, you know, they just say, screw it, you know, I've got nicks on my knees, or, you know, my legs are hairy. And, you know, you might have to be looking at your coworker's kind of unkempt, if you will, shins if he's wearing shorts.
That's Jacob Gallagher, men's fashion columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, 5-year-olds helping rescue turtles.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
We'll finish with this. Some turtles in New Jersey recently got a boost from a class of kindergartners. 17 young turtles that had been raised from eggs retrieved from the smashed bodies of mothers killed on roads were released back into the wild. The AP says a group called the Wetlands Institute runs the program along with Stockton University and Stone Harbor Schools. The program has saved thousands of turtles and returned them to the wild over the past 25 years. Aside from caring for injured live turtles, the Wetlands Institute harvests eggs from females killed on the road and incubates them at 86 degrees, a temperature that will ensure they develop as females, since the sex of these turtles is determined by their temperature as eggs.
Stockton also incubates eggs and cares for the turtles in the first year of their lives, prepping them for release. That's where the kids come in. Kindergartners from Stone Harbor Schools give them names and sell cookies to raise money for turtle conservation. The program, by the way, releases up to 200 turtles into the wild each year. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.